It's the new duet that he did with the love of his life, Camila Cabello, the Christmas song. I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Alice Bryant, and Jill Robbins. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
China and Nepal have announced a new official height for Mount Everest, the world's highest mountain. After new measurements, the two countries reported on Tuesday that Everest's peak stands 8,848.86 meters tall. The mountain runs along the borders of Nepal and China. The new height is a bit more than Nepal's past measurement and about 4 meters higher than China's. The result was announced during an online video event led by the foreign ministers of China and Nepal. The two countries agreed to the official height after expert teams completed new surveys of the mountain in 2019 and 2020. Everest is an eternal symbol of friendship between Nepal and China, Nepali Foreign Minister Pradeep Kumar Gyawali said. There had been debate over the actual height of the peak and concern that it might have shrunk after a major earthquake in 2015. The quake killed 9,000 people and damaged about 1 million structures in Nepal. It also caused an avalanche on Everest that killed 19 people. Everest's height was first declared as 8,842 meters by a British team around 1856. But the most widely accepted height has been 8,848 meters, which was decided by the Survey of India in 1954. In 1999, a National Geographic Society team used GPS technology to come up with a height of 8,850 meters. But in 2005, a Chinese team reported a height of 8,844.43 meters because it did not include the mountain's snow top. A Nepal government team of climbers and surveyors climbed Everest in May 2019. The team used GPS and satellite equipment to measure the peak and snow depth at the top of the mountain. Chinese President Xi Jinping visited Nepal later that year. The leaders of the two countries decided they should agree on an official height. A survey team from China then carried out measurements in the spring of 2020, when all other climbing activities had stopped because of the coronavirus crisis. Nepal's climbing community welcomed the end of disputes over Everest's height. This is a milestone in mountaineering history, which will finally end the debate over the height, and now the world will have one number, said Santa Birlama. He is president of the Nepal Mountaineering Association. The first people to officially climb Everest were New Zealand's Sir Edmund Hillary and Nepal's Sherpa Tenzing Norgay. They reached the peak in May of 1953. Since then, the mountain has been climbed 10,184 times by 5,789 people. Those numbers come from the Himalayan database, which records climbing activity. I'm Brian Lynn.
One student runs 26 meters up a hill every morning to get a telephone signal so he can report into the virtual school day. Another moved alone to Phoenix, Arizona, for a job as a builder after his only parent died. He continued his studies online there. And then there is the student who spends 6 hours most days doing schoolwork in a car next to a school bus that offers Wi-Fi. COVID-19 has created severe difficulty for Navajo Nation students. Across the reservation, victims of COVID-19 include parents and grandparents, guardians and providers, school advisors, and teachers. Without them, some students have fallen behind or even disappeared from school. One local school official said, "We have some children that we just don't know where they are." Just a few hundred families live in the town of Pinyon in Arizona. Their houses are spread over small desert hills. A single group of buildings houses the school for children of all K through 12 grade levels. On the Navajo reservation, the COVID-19 death rate has been higher than any U.S. state. So, as some U.S. schools reopened for in-person learning this fall, those on the Navajo reservation did not. Unlike their students, Pinyon High School's teachers report to work in person each day. They are careful to wear face coverings and stay as socially distant as possible. Science teacher James Gustafson says student performance is suffering. Their marks are far lower than what he saw last year. "I've given the students who have turned nothing in, and there's a lot of them, a zero," he said. Even before the coronavirus crisis, Native young people had the highest dropout rates in the U.S. Only about 72% of Native American and Alaska Native students complete high school. The national average is 85%. The National Caucus of Native American State Legislators says the state of education for K through 12 schools for Native students is worrisome. And the coronavirus crisis has only served to worsen the problem. More than 600 of the Navajo Nation's 173,000 people have died from COVID-19. That is 347 deaths for every 100,000 people. Yet, in Arizona's largest county, Maricopa County, the death rate is 86 per 100,000 people. Timothy Nelson leads Pinyon High School. He said COVID-19 has killed at least 6 parents of students, a teaching assistant, and a school office worker. "Some people may think it's a joke and it's not a big deal," Nelson said of the disease. But when you're living with it and you see it, it's not so much a joke anymore. Derek Franklin is an education program manager with the Department of Diné Education. He spent months working with officials in New Mexico and Arizona to keep schools on the reservation closed. The goal, he said, is to protect the Navajo people, a feeling shared across Navajo leadership. In August, Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez issued a statement urging schools to stay online until at least 2021.
Teachers, parents, and students are overcoming huge barriers to learn at a distance. Chris Ostgaard is the superintendent, or top official, of the Pinyon school system. He said only about 50% of students have some form of internet connection. That includes slow connections and those only on cell phones. High-speed internet service is found in about 25% of homes on the reservation. Less than half of the homes have a computer, federal data shows. Reaching students with no connection at all has been a serious issue. Ostgaard said enrollment across the three schools has decreased by about 100 students from last year. Some, he said, have disappeared, basically. Several times each week, the school system sends out buses filled with paper schoolwork for students to pick up. With federal aid for COVID-19, the district got 14 buses equipped with Wi-Fi internet. The buses travel up to an hour, often on dirt roads. They sit in a place where families can drive close so students can use the internet for their schoolwork. About 20 miles from the district school, one of those Wi-Fi buses sits across the road from a gas station. Two cars with their engines on sit beside it. Inside, four sisters, ages 6 to 17, hold small laptop computers. They send the day's schoolwork to their teachers as their parents try to help. Their parents are math teacher Beverly Mix and construction worker Dekoven Begay. Both have been out of their paying jobs since the coronavirus crisis began. "Making sure my kids get online is a job," Mix said. "And making sure that they understand what they're being taught is a job. Sometimes the teacher only gives 20 minutes of class," she noted. Each of the Mix's four girls has a specially designed car desk that Mix bought online. Their laptops were provided by the school district. Chinoa, the oldest daughter, is almost finished with high school. She dreams of attending a university and to one day work for the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation. But she said it has been hard to fill out university applications without her school advisor. Chinoa says she has a better support system than many of her friends. But even so, the family's home internet is too weak to download large documents or connect to video programming. So they spend about 20 hours a week in their car near the Wi-Fi school bus. At lunchtime, drivers of the Wi-Fi buses find out how many meals the gathered children need. During the pandemic, the school has been putting together take-home breakfasts and lunches for families.
Research in May showed that school setbacks during the pandemic would likely be worse for children of color and those who live in poverty. It found that this is especially true for the ones without dependable internet. Gustafson, the science teacher, calls the divide between children with and without internet a form of segregation. Ostgaard, the superintendent, said that the district has a few students that he would almost consider homeless at this point. They have lost their parent or guardian, so they move from one family member's home to another. Still, for students with the right situations, Pinion's online efforts have worked well. In fact, the state has given the district approval to use its teaching methods to open a fully online high school for any Arizona student. So, when Pinion schools do reopen their doors, students will have the choice whether to return. I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Rutherford Hayes was sworn into office as the 19th President of the United States in 1877. Hayes, a Republican, became president after a disputed election. Representatives of his party and the Democrats met secretly to work out a compromise. The Democrats agreed to let Hayes be sworn in. In return, he agreed to end federal support of radical Republican governments in the South. He promised to name Southerners to his cabinet and other important jobs. And he said he would provide more federal aid for schools and railroads in the South. As part of the agreement, Hayes promised not to act aggressively to support the civil rights of black Southerners. Steve Ember and Richard Rail tell the story of Rutherford Hayes.
Rutherford Hayes was born in Ohio in 1822. He was a good student at Kenyon College and at Harvard Law School. He opened a law office in Cincinnati. When he was 30 years old, he married Lucy Webb. Later, he served as an officer in the Union Army during America's Civil War. He was elected to the United States House of Representatives. He also served as governor of Ohio. In this job, he helped establish the college that became Ohio State University.
Hayes was a Republican. In 1876, he was the party's compromise candidate for president. His opponent in the national election was Democrat Samuel Tilden. Tilden won more popular votes than Hayes. In the American political system, whoever wins the most popular votes in a state usually gets all the electoral votes of that state. In 1876, both the Republicans and Democrats claimed the electoral votes of three southern states, Florida, Louisiana, and South Carolina. So it was not clear at first who had won the presidential election.
Congress appointed a committee to decide the issue. The committee had a Republican majority. It gave the disputed electoral votes to Hayes. He won the election by just one electoral vote. The results came just a few days before the inauguration. Democrats protested that the Republicans had stolen the election, yet they agreed to accept Hayes as president. In exchange, Hayes and the Republicans agreed to accept Democratic Party policies on several issues. Hayes's administration would deal mainly with national,
not international problems.
At first, people wondered, would President Hayes keep the promises that were made to help him win the election? Most thought he would not. Hayes surprised everyone. In his inaugural speech, he promised to put the country ahead of the party. He said, "He serves his party best who serves his country best." Party leaders told Hayes which men to appoint to his cabinet. He refused and made his own choices. He ordered federal troops to withdraw from South Carolina and Louisiana. The troops had been there since the end of the Civil War. He also helped Southern Democrats establish new governments in their states.
Republican Party leaders criticized President Hayes. Anti-slavery groups also criticized him. They said former black slaves in the South had gained a lot under Republican rule. Now, they said, these black Americans would lose everything. Hayes did not agree. He had received promises that the new Democratic state governments would protect the rights of black Americans. It was not to be. White Democrats kept political control in some southern states for many years. They often denied civil rights to black citizens. Only with the rise of the civil rights movement in the 1950s would the situation begin to change.
After becoming president, Rutherford Hayes announced that he would serve just one term. He wanted to make serious reforms in the federal government. This would be easier to do if he did not have to worry about getting reelected. Hayes started by changing the system that employed people in government jobs. Party leaders usually had great power to fill government jobs. They used the jobs to reward loyal party workers and to increase their own political strength. President Hayes demanded that federal jobs be given to people because of their abilities, not because they supported a politician.
At that time, the best jobs were with the Customs Service of the Treasury Department. The people who collected customs, taxes on imports, could keep part of the money they collected. President Hayes took action against the Customs Service office in New York City. One of the men removed from the job there was James Garfield. Garfield would later become President of the United States. Hayes also banned all federal workers from taking part in political organizations, conventions, and campaigns. And he said politicians no longer could demand campaign money from federal workers.
Rutherford Hayes showed more political strength during a nationwide railroad strike. The strike began during his first summer as president. For several years, the nation had suffered from a serious economic depression. 3 million people were out of work. Factories and businesses reduced the pay of those who still had jobs. Workers with the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad protested. They took control of many areas along the railroad. They refused to let the trains move. The strike spread to other railroads. In some places, the strikes turned into riots, and the riots became violent. Some governors ordered their state armed forces to intervene. The state forces were not strong enough, however. So the governors asked President Hayes for help. He immediately sent federal troops to troubled cities. The troops stopped the riots and ended the strikes.
Another issue during Hayes's administration involved a railroad in the western United States. It was both a labor problem and an immigration problem. Thousands of Chinese workers had been brought to America to help build the Central Pacific Railroad. After the railroad was built, many of them remained. Most settled in California. Others came from China to join them. These immigrants competed with white workers for jobs. Whites protested because the Chinese agreed to work for less money. They said this kept wages down for all workers.
The white workers asked Congress for a law to stop Chinese workers from coming to the United States. Members of Congress from both parties wanted the support of these voters, so they quickly passed a bill that made it much more difficult for Chinese citizens to come to live in the United States. The bill said the president must cancel part of a treaty between the United States and China. That part of the treaty permitted citizens of each country to settle in the other country.
President Hayes vetoed the bill. He said the United States had proposed the treaty. So, he said, the United States could not change it without agreement from China. Hayes did agree, however, that some action was necessary. So he opened negotiations with the Chinese government. He won an agreement to limit the number of Chinese who could enter the United States.
During the administrations of Andrew Johnson and Ulysses Grant, Congress had weakened many powers of the president. Congress had become the strongest of the three branches of American government. Throughout his administration, Rutherford Hayes worked hard to strengthen presidential powers. For example, the United States Constitution gives the president power to veto bills passed by Congress. In the 1800s, Congress tried to prevent presidential vetoes. It used a method of attaching riders to legislative proposals. This is how the method works.
Congress considers a bill the president believes is necessary. Then it joins that bill to a measure the president would veto if passed separately. The extra measure is called a rider to the first bill. To get the bill he wants, the president must accept the rider, too. President Hayes refused to sign any bills with riders. So the Congress, during his administration, stopped using the method. Congresses since then have used it successfully.
Rutherford Hayes kept his promise to serve only 4 years. He did not regret his decision. After leaving office in 1881, he said he was satisfied with what he had done. He looked back on his administration and wrote, "I left this country prosperous and happy. I left the party of my choice strong, victorious, and united. In serving the country, I served my party." He died in 1893.
Hayes was right in saying that the United States was strong and prosperous. The late 1800s were a time of growth for the nation.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.